Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Herbie, let's go.
Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
Majority of folks here in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
If Anthony Herron were on the phone, I would tell you that he was calling me on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from in Melrose Park. But he is here in studio, as he always is, on Mondays after games.
It was fun to flip the script on you yesterday.
Yeah, I got to be a guest on Anthony's show yesterday after my trip to Radio Row, and he flipped that on me, and I thought it was really, really good, and I appreciate that, sir.
Yeah.
You guys did a fun show. I was listening a lot yesterday morning to you and Arthur break everything down. Where do you want to start? Do we can do the Anthony Herron thing where we start talking about Patrick Mahomes and the run game and the X's and O's and what does this mean for Kyle Shanahan to have this happen again in a Super Bowl? Or we could talk about the other stuff. Your choice. Dealer's choice.
You know what? I've been on the radio for 6 hours already today. I wouldn't mind starting with the other stuff. I've done a lot of X's and O's already so far. I've been X'ing and O'ing my way through the day. Sirius XM, yeah, the other stuff kind of stuck out to me as well.
Okay, I really enjoy the take it to the house thing to open up the game. I thought that was one of the best pieces. Like between that and the NFL 100 thing that they did last year with the fumble and everyone at the dinner party, those are two really great pieces of art that they put together to celebrate the NFL.
And they've certainly got the budget to do it at that level. And when you think about the way, and you know, we've probably all talked to some extent in recent years about the numbers for youth football enrollment and how those are going down in a lot of areas around the country. And I think there are so many different ways you can still enjoy and appreciate the sport at a young age. And if you don't like your kid playing tackle football early, then don't. But I think that the NFL's focus on trying to make sure essentially that future NFL players, future football players are still engaged with the sport. And that's just one example where they put out this nationwide call basically for folks who may want an opportunity, may get an opportunity to be involved in that particular function in the commercial that they ran in addition to that. And it was a lot of cool shots, a lot of things that people submitted. And it was a nice look at how the NFL, with their, you know, their vast audience and their vast resources and everything else, can put together a really cool piece of art, something that fits and flows right in directly with the beginning of the game.
I thought that all on the field, the pregame stuff was clean too. Mm-hmm. Yolanda Adams singing America the Beautiful.
Yeah.
Demi Lovato with the national anthem is great because Demi's gone through a lot and see her have that success and nail it.
And I kind of anticipated maybe she, because we saw in the Grammys last week, she kind of got choked up and had a bit of a moment right from the start of the song. And she seemed very composed last night with the anthem for the Super Bowl. And, you know, who knows if it was pre-recorded or taped or whatever. I don't think that matters. It was her voice. Like, Whitney's was pre-recorded, but it was Whitney's voice. But Demi did a really nice job. It came together well. She had herself looking good, sounding good, and everything. Just the overall production of pregame, I thought, was quality.
Yeah, those were the things where you look and go, okay, is this going to be a buttoned-up thing? Because all week down in Radio Row, like I got to see kind of the power of the NFL like take place, like all this stuff. I'm like, wow, they have really innovated since I've spent a lot of time like around the NFL machine.
Yeah.
You know, it's different when you're dealing with one team, but the NFL machine is very well oiled at this point. There was a moment where I guess there was a problem with my picture on the ID. Like I had forwarded it and I guess somehow there was a piece of the cursor that was in the photo, so they didn't allow it. And okay. I said, "Oh, okay." They said, "We need to take another picture." And I said, "Okay, no problem." I take the picture and I go, well, is it going to be like a half an hour, like an hour? And they're like, no, no, we're printing you a new credential right now. And I was like, oh, wow. Like that. I was like, okay. And so they were doing, you had to scan in to every place that you went. So, because and the NFL experience there was really cool. And I got the privilege of doing it when no one was there. So I walked around the NFL experience on Thursday morning and it was amazing. I'm still trying to figure out, because I did a lot of Instagram stories.
Okay.
I think maybe I should post some more of those pictures and just like standalones on Instagram. But they did a bejeweled helmet thing. And some of the helmets looked really cool, including the Bears. They looked really cool. So I had a great time. I thought that their product was good. And that, to me, extends all the way to the halftime festivities. What did you think? What did you think of J-Lo and Shakira?
I thought they did exactly what I expected they were going to do.
Too.
I don't really answer. You know, from what I definitely know their music at a fairly high level, I think. Nothing as much in recent years. But I don't think of, you know, Shakira more so. But I don't think of either one as necessarily strictly a vocalist, so I didn't listen to it in thinking that I was going to hear something musically, vocally, that was going to set the world ablaze. I thought they both sounded fine. Obviously, they were both lip-syncing for the most part. It seemed like Shakira did some live singing at certain points throughout, but a lot of the hip shaking and rump shaking that was going on, that was not a surprise either. And, you know, I think that for certain moments in the show that were obviously more personal, putting their own kind of personal touch or cultural touch on things too, I thought that was a pretty cool educational opportunity also. Like there was the moment where Shakira's doing the tongue flick thing at the camera.
I can't even do it.
Yeah, right. It's, you know, it's not easy to pull off. But then you come to find out that that's more cultural from her, you know, where her father's from and how he was brought up.
Yep.
And, you know, you kind of educate yourself on that.
She's Lebanese along with being Colombian.
Right.
Her name is actually Arabic. Shakira is an Arabic name.
Mm-hmm.
So she brought that in.
Zagruta, I think, is the term for what it was that she did there. So, I mean, that was cool just to see that, not only because just visually it has kind of one interpretation when you're looking at it and you don't really know exactly what's going on, but then also when you take the extra moment to kind of go a layer deeper and recognize there's something personal to her that's going on, or J-Lo's daughter was the one singing at one point in the show, right? So I think that while it's this worldwide event, but then when you have that opportunity on that stage as a performer to put your own spin, to put your own personal touch in there, and to have that be a way that folks react to you, that folks kind of consume you as a performer in a bit of a different manner. I think it was good that both of them took little individual opportunities. They're watching Shakira play the drums, play the guitar for folks who don't necessarily know some of the things stylistically that she can do.
She's a musician.
She is, you know, in a different way than J-Lo is, you know.
No.
Yeah.
She's a musician and J-Lo does music.
J-Lo is a performer.
Yeah. Yes, and exactly. you got that. It was big. Uh-huh. Like I loved it that they was very Latinx. It was very Miami. Yeah. It was very, let's put on a show.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They put on a show. And
I would have predicted that there would be either and or Pitbull and or Gloria Estefan to make an appearance somewhere during the performance. Neither one of them was there, so I was a little bit surprised by that. I kind of figured, all right, if you're doing Miami and you're doing the Latinx sort of vibe, then Pitbull or Gloria would have probably made sense in some fashion.
Well, I can't remember. Was Pitbull in her commercial?
Yes. Yep.
So,
Pitbull was in J-Lo's commercial.
Yeah.
So he had a presence. He definitely had a presence.
The one where she's chasing down DJ Khaled. it was very funny. And I enjoyed it. It was a very well done performance. It was just like a big party. Here you go.
It was. And that's Miami. That's what it should be. You know, when it's in Vegas, I'll be very curious to see how that goes, you know, because there's been so many performers from all around the world who've made their bones doing like their own deal in Vegas. So I'm sure there's going to be something very specific to the Vegas flavor when it's there too. But between the college football national championship game and then Super Bowl halftime, those are the two opportunities where I don't miss an opportunity, because I'm constantly reminded in my mind of Janet Jackson with the Super Bowl halftime show. And that certainly yesterday with the pearl clutcher that was going on and everyone survived. We all woke up this morning and got through it okay. I mean, I'll admit, even just as we're watching it at home, me, my wife, and my two-year-old, and Bishop's looking up at the TV, and me and the wife looking at each other for a minute, like, man, he is locked in on the, you know, those hips were not lying. They were talking to Bishop for a minute. I was like, okay, all right, you know, maybe turn around and look at something else for a minute. But then it just turned into a family dance party. He wanted to watch it, so we came up. He's stomping around, and we just started dancing as a family. We enjoyed it. We had a good time with it. And then it reminds me that, well, yeah, apparently Janet Jackson got excommunicated from the football world at a certain point. So then I put my little free Janet deal out there, as I probably do almost every year.
Good, because she should be invited back.
I mean,
they invited Justin back.
Yeah, Justin's been back. Justin was unscathed. And at this point where you had the senior citizens home being rolled out for a couple of years for the halftime show, we are obviously well beyond that.
Well,
now.
And it's clear that they are trying to do some outreach to the Latinx community. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big reason why they're right. Like, oh, well, it'll be J-Lo, it'll be Shakira. Shakira is I would say, even more of a world artist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than she is a pop artist in the States. So that was them doing outreach. Mm-hmm. And I think it worked. I think that it worked. And I thought that they were able to, whether it was some of the messages they wanted to convey or whether it was some of the choreography that they wanted to use, I thought they were able to do all of that. And I walked away going, all right.
It's a good show.
It was a good show.
Yeah.
And now I'm ready for the next thing, which is is the football aspect of it. I want to make sure that we can spend enough time on this as possible. So I want to take a break.
Okay.
So now we have a nice clear demarcation. We have talked about the other stuff. When we come back, we're going to talk about the football.
Oh, yeah.
How did the Chiefs score 21 points in the fourth quarter? And why weren't the Niners able to stop them? We'll talk with Anthony about that next. Anthony Herron is here. I'm Lawrence Holmes. Top of the hour is being brought to you by Neumel Medical Center. Discover the new you, NeumelMedical.com. Football breakdown coming up next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Next here on The Score.
Under center Mahomes, second down, 6 from the 38. Handoff to Williams, got a block from the fullback. He's at the 35, the 30, breaks a tackle on the sideline, 20, chasing him down the sideline, the 10, the 5, touchdown! That's it! That's it!
Kevin Harlan is my favorite play-by-play guy, and there's not a close second for me. I think he's that good. Fourth quarter, you had the Chiefs scoring 21 points. They win the Super Bowl. Big Ann Herron is here in studio hanging out with me. Now we get a chance to talk ball. What was San Francisco doing early on to have Patrick Mahomes seem like he was off? It looked as if they were getting their hands on him, number one. But was there anything schematically that they were doing that made him less effective?
They did a really nice job throughout much of the game, I think, in keeping safety help over the top and saying, all right, if you're going to throw in rhythm, we're going to do what we can, even not always by getting hands on receivers, but just spatially. We'll keep guys in coverage, and we will force you to throw some of those anticipatory passes through some tight windows, and that's really been his specialty. It's something that makes him so exceptional usually as a young quarterback, because that anticipation throw, the tight window throw, the throw where the receiver is not yet in the quadrant of the field you're trying to hit, but defenders are, and you're still willing to try to thread the ball through a certain space where your receiver hasn't declared himself open yet. And Mahomes, in a very short, very young career so far, has specialized in that willingness to put the ball towards the space, to start his arm action, to hit his release point before receiver's there, in a way that Peyton Manning developed into becoming the all-time best at that later in his career. Mahomes is already exceptional at that early on. San Francisco, between a combination of their front four pressure and what they were doing in keeping him just a little bit off rhythm. We were talking about it a bit last week, where I thought the 49ers would need at some point to dial up some pressure to continue to keep him off rhythm, to speed up his process more than what he's comfortable with. And between that second and third quarter, he was out of sorts. Like, that was some of the worst ball over the most extended period of time that I've seen in just watching a full game of Pat Mahomes. And for the 49ers, they were keeping that safety help over the top. They were making sure that if you think somebody's behind us, we're not going to give you the body position to make it declare in a definitive manner. And the Chiefs did a really effective job of continuing to move the pocket with him. But one of the things that does, though, is that when the pocket moves, he invariably will at least to some extent drop his eyes for a moment just to get on the track, just to get on the landmark he needs to go towards while he's on the move. And so between boots and play action and the RPO action where he goes on some of these sprints to either side of the field, some of those things end up taking his eyes down for just a brief moment. So that can even be something when the defense is spatially as good as San Francisco was with their matching of patterns throughout the game, it can make it tough on a quarterback. So I thought the depth on their back end and the landmarks being hit at the linebacker position were as crisp and as clean as someone could hope for with a couple of weeks to prepare going into the game. And then as we were all talking about, could that pass rush continue to get home? And for a lot of that game, they were. And they continued to get home. And you could tell that was part of what, you know, Pat Mahomes was struggling with, just in feeling that pressure. As great as Nick Bosa is, this is something I was saying to Dan and Connor towards the end of the week last week. You better keep your eye on DeForest Buckner. DeForest Buckner is a special talent on the interior as well. And he, for a stretch of the game now, between slide protection and multiple blockers hitting him back and forth, he didn't necessarily, you know, snap by snap have all the impact, but when they're constantly occupying him with multiple blockers, that's part of what creates those Nick Bosa one-on-one opportunities that folks are trying to figure out sometimes. Man, how could you ever leave Bosa one-on-one? You only got so many blockers you can leave in on protection with these offenses today that are going to have receivers out in the route tree, and they have to, because he's coming up the gut in a lot of situations. They got to occupy Buckner with multiple blockers, and he still made a huge impact.
How do you feel about Kyle Shanahan's handling of the end of the first half?
I was surprised that it was more conservative than I would have anticipated he would be in that moment, because I think where Jimmy Garoppolo didn't spend a lot of the first quarter looking that decisive, throwing the ball that well, but once you had gotten to that portion of the game, it looked like he had gotten more comfortable. I felt like he was in rhythm by the time you got into quarter number two. And so I would have thought that we would have seen Kyle Shanahan get a little bit more assertive, and knowing that either I'm going to be the last guy with the ball if I take this approach, or I've got an opportunity to put.
I thought he was going to double dip because they were getting the ball back. So I'm like, oh, they're going to totally double dip here.
Right.
And they didn't. And I was like, wow, that shocked me that he wasn't himself.
And if my fellow Hawkeye George Kittle, if he wouldn't have picked up the flag where he extends his arm and impedes the progress of the defender, then maybe the latter stage of that first half ends differently, because you get that chunk play, and then you, as a coach, as a play caller, can stay in that more aggressive mentality. But that just, it seemed like that was something that, knowing that flag was there, was part of what Kyle Shanahan ends up saying, you know what, maybe this entire half we just need to get out of here because we're not getting those calls, we're not making those plays in that moment. So I do think that part, that particular play, which I think was the right call, the OPI by the officials. Some folks disagree with me on Twitter. Yeah, they could call it a bunch overall, but they don't call it every time. That doesn't mean when they call it there, it's the wrong call. It means I think they should call it more frequently than they do. You know, Kittle extended the arm. The defender was trying to catch up with him. When you extend it, and especially when you see the defender's upper body raise up during the extension of the arm from the receiver. That should be called, and I think it was the right call they made in that moment, but it was a conservative approach that Shanahan took in that last opportunity to be the last team with the ball. And, you know, later on, then it comes back where it looks like something that bites them in that moment because they don't put the points on the board that they could have right there.
Anthony Heron joining me here in studio. We're talking about Super Bowl 54, the Chiefs being able to come back and win the game in the fourth quarter with 21 points. Mahomes found his rhythm once they got themselves down. I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't make any sense that in every game in the playoffs, you find yourself down by 10 points or more, and then all of a sudden you go, hold on, I'm Patrick Mahomes. Watch this. Mm. And he's able to turn it around. What happened in the fourth quarter? Were these breakdowns that were happening on the Niners defense, or was it a product of their offense just not being able to close the door?
Part of it was the Sword of Omens, you know, from Lion-O and the Thundercats, and having that to give him sight beyond sight. In addition to that, it was because we saw the Chiefs defense, and that's where the collective team effort comes into winning a Super Bowl, because the Chiefs defense certainly continued to ramp their game up. And where Jimmy G, in the second and third quarter, Jimmy Garoppolo was playing like the better quarterback in the Super Bowl throughout that stretch of the game. He wasn't special, but especially when he came out in the third quarter, he was in rhythm, he was on time, he was throwing with conviction and decisiveness, hitting guys in stride, allowing some more run after catch from his receivers. And you could tell when he came out of halftime, he had his game going, and Mahomes didn't throughout a lot of that third quarter and into some of the fourth quarter. And then it finally got to that point where, all right, here they are. They're down 10 points again. They're down two scores. And that's when it seems like, for whatever reason, in whatever manner it tends to happen, especially every game so far this postseason, they got their game going. I liked the fact that, and I thought San Francisco got away from it, where both offenses usually do a very nice job of constant pocket movement. If you heard me talk about so much this season as it related to the Bears, San Francisco began to get away from that. San Francisco, because Garoppolo started to throw the ball well, because he continued to throw it in rhythm, with anticipation, hitting guys in stride, it seemed like Kyle Shanahan said, all right, he's got his game going. My protection's holding up pretty well. So it seemed like Kyle Shanahan said, all right, I'm cool sitting him in the pocket, and I don't need to keep Jimmy G on the move. They got away from the sprints, the boots, the hard play action that have been such a staple for the 49ers this entire season. And when they weren't doing that, then it got to the point where Jimmy G began to look more like a regular quarterback, just more like any other dude in the NFL who's going to have some errant. And that was the wrong time for him to fall out of rhythm, because he was starting to drive his team, to lead his team towards the Super Bowl championship. Conversely, the Chiefs continued to move the pocket. The Chiefs continued mixing in quick game, mixing in sprint action over and over again. And for them, for Andy Reid, for Eric Bieniemy, they're saying, you know what? I know that opposing pass rush will continue to be a nightmare if we don't do that. My sense was Shanahan said, you know, we got one of the best offensive lines in the league. Their pass rush is fine. You know, Frank Clark's okay. He's a guy who's made some money, but he's not impacting the game that well. And so I think in a way it can be sometimes for an offensive coordinator where that opponent hasn't necessarily knocked you off your rhythm yet. They haven't imposed their will. So you almost relax a little bit in saying that this is working fine so far. So not just from a play call standpoint, but in saying that I can in a way get comfortable with where my quarterback is, even though all that movement of the pocket, all that cutting down reads for him, all the things they've done to take the pressure, the load of the passing game off of Jimmy Garoppolo, so much of it ended up being heaped on him in the second half, and he couldn't quite deliver. There was an opportunity. You know, he had, who was it, Emmanuel Sanders, open behind the defense.
Yeah, that throw, I mean, because he had him by two steps.
Yeah.
If that throw is anywhere close, like even if you give Sanders,
even give him a chance to lay out something.
If it's close, you're probably, but who knows? I mean, then Mahomes comes back and goes, you know what
right,
I mean?
Like, right. But it's not game, set, match, but that's the throw that could have put you in position for a Super Bowl.
And that's the throw that I've said throughout the year. I think Garoppolo is a little bit better than average.
Right.
And I know that some of the numbers say that he's way better than average, but I think he's a little bit better than average. And you saw that play out at the end of the game where you're like, you need him to make the play.
Yeah.
And he couldn't. He wasn't able to make the play. I did love, though, you're down four, it's 2:30 left to go in the game, run it. I loved that. You get 17 yards on your first play. That's a great, like, I felt like that was the most Kyle Shanahan moment of the entire game, where he's like,
current Kyle Shanahan.
Like, screw it. We're getting 6 yards a crack. Run the ball, and you end up getting a chunk play out of that. I loved watching that. With Mahomes, we've been talking about why he's such a special player, why he's able to do these things that he's done. We just had Jeff Allen on, who played for the Chiefs until October.
All right, yeah.
And he was discussing some of the things that he's seen in practice. I talked with the folks in Kansas City during media day, and I'm so glad that he told that story. The story that I was told was one day in practice, like during an 11-on-11, he threw a ball behind his back for a touchdown. And Jeff now confirms that did happen in practice. And he said he watched it on film. We're watching a guy who sees the game differently than most of the quarterbacks who are playing it now. I bristled about the Favre comp because I felt like Favre is a little bit more reckless than Patrick is. And if you look at touchdown interception ratio, it kind of bears that out. But you saw some of the reckless with him yesterday. And now I'm starting to go, yeah, the Favre comp's pretty good. Because you would see Brett Favre do stuff and you go, how?
Right.
How does that even happen? And that's where, like, I'm left scratching my head watching Mahomes. Like, he gives you something every game, you go, how? how is he able to do that? He's a fun player to watch, and I can't even wait to see what he looks like 3 years from now.
And he's such a combination. Like, Aaron Rodgers has so many similarities to Brett Favre. You know, he protects the ball at a much higher level because he doesn't necessarily put it in jeopardy in the manner that Brett did. But frankly, you know, just route combinations, the amount of receivers you have available to throw to, those things have all advanced over what the NFL was throughout most of Brett's career anyway. And, you know, Aaron's just a guy who's more precise with the way he plays. But Mahomes, I think, goes beyond that because – where Aaron has the ability to anticipate throws, no doubt about it, but he's not a guy who is sort of unwilling to hold the ball. Aaron would prefer to hold the ball looking for that deep shot, looking for that big play. That's not what Mahomes has to do, whereas Pat, it's kind of like in those crunch time, in the key moments, when he feels like maybe he can step on someone's throat, that's most when you'll see him hold the ball and look for a deep shot, or hold the ball and look for some really kind of goofy play, or whether it's a no look or throwing back across his body, across the field, and some of those things. And he combines an anticipation like we saw from Peyton Manning in throwing before guys are getting out of their breaks and into windows where it looks like there's nothing but a defender there, and then suddenly a receiver appears out of nowhere. He's got that game with the type of arm that we saw from Brett Favre, that we see from Aaron Rodgers, and still that ability, that willingness to be able to hum it in there. Like the throw he made, the 3rd and 15, where he's throwing it all the way across the field to Tyreek Hill, where he doesn't really have a legit platform to do it, that's the arm strength that's flashing in that moment to make it happen, because that's a throw most humans can't make, to put that type of distance on the ball from where he did it and with the sort of body angle he was doing it from. But then you also get the one later in the drive where Sammy Watkins takes the inside release on Richard Sherman and then begins to fade his way back out towards the sideline. And he has to throw it firm with an arc over Sherman, but before the safety can react. And this is crunch time, man. This is the Super Bowl is on the line.
As he's being pressured, backside pressure.
Under heat. And the one he made on 3rd and 15 where Tyreek Hill comes back and gets it, that's almost more of, I mean, Hill was fairly wide open, and it's, you know, it's almost a prayer in a way where, you know, all right, this is a play we need to make. Whereas the one he throws to Watkins is precision, is touch, is timing. And that's where things tense up on quarterbacks, where the game is nearing cold crush depth. You know your season's on the line. And to be able to have the calm, the comfort to keep your breathing still and everything else, to put just the soft little teardrop touch on the ball where it doesn't float, though, to the extent that you get it down in front of that defender, that's that feathery touch that he has to rapidly, radically change and redirect the nose of the football like that. It's just something most guys can't do, and you normally don't see someone who can do both at that level, and he does both at a historic level.
What does this do for Andy Reid?
I mean, it at least gets Andy Reid Twitter off his back for a while. I mean, in my mind, he was certainly a Hall of Fame coach already, where
Me
we've
too.
Seen him over multiple stops with a variety of quarterbacks, move the ball at such an extreme level and have so many winning seasons over and over again. So to me, he was already solidified as a Hall of Famer. But I think just the collective joy that seemed to be there from his current players, from past players, friends I have within the Chiefs organization, when I text with them, it's immediately texting back about Andy and some of those types of things. Folks are happy for him because he's been so great for so long at what he does. He's such a great human being as well. People enjoy being around him. He just can't wait to force his assistants, his coordinators, to work their way, to ascend to the whatever heights he can try to help them get towards. So that's where this collective celebration of Andy Reid is certainly due. But as far as just his resume, he was a Hall of Fame guy anyway. So when the opportunity is there, he should go in first ballot as soon as it's available. I think what we saw the other night, one name that continues to pop into my head, I was talking about it a bit yesterday with Arthur when we were on, and I don't know why Dan Reeves isn't in, because Dan Reeves, he doesn't have the Super Bowl title, but he's sort of a similar guy to Andy Reid, where he's had assistants ascend, where he's won at multiple stops at a high level, been to more Super Bowls than most guys, not only as a player and as an assistant and also as a head coach, 4 Super Bowls, didn't win any of them, but 3 in Denver, 1 in Atlanta. I don't know why Dan Reeves doesn't get the type of Hall of Fame esteem that he should at this point. I would be shocked if he doesn't get in at some point, but it feels like he should at least be getting some of that finalist buzz that really hasn't come up for him. But Andy Reid getting that Super Bowl, now it's okay. There's nothing left that anyone can really question about where Andy Reid's at this point in his coaching tenure.
How about Eric Bieniemy pulling from the 1948 Rose Bowl?
Right.
For a run play on the goal line where you have the guys act like the Temptations and do a spin move.
Exactly. That's his spin on it too.
And I went back and looked at the video. Yeah. It's there.
They shifted. Now, it wasn't the reverse pivot Temptation style like this, but they did shift. There was a collective in unison, a symmetry to the shift that Michigan used in the backfield, and they used it several times in that Rose Bowl. They beat USC, I think it was 49-0. They trounced USC in that game. And that to me, especially for that to be part of the story that comes out of that game, is something that I think does and should continue to enhance the overall way that we view Eric, the collective we, that the sports world, that the football community views Eric Bieniemy and his role in what's been one of the more special offensive runs that we've seen in modern football with the Chiefs right now.
Big Ant, I appreciate your work all season long,
no doubt,
sir. It's great having you be in addition to our show throughout the football season. I guess the next thing we'll probably talk about is the combine. And
it's coming up fast.
At some point later on this week, I'm going to talk about the Bears. But I'm going to try not to do that right now. But I do have stories.
Keep things joyous.
I do have stories and content from folks that wanted to talk to me about the Bears.
I bet they did.
In Miami. Big Ant Heron, that's where you can follow him on Twitter. He's a tremendous follow. And if you love ball, this is a guy that you should be listening to when he's doing stuff here or on SiriusXM or all the 137 other jobs that he has. He's a great, great friend and a fantastic analyst. So we appreciate his work throughout the entire football season. I have something to tell you about the confetti that you might not know next here on The Score. So Herbie's right. During the break, he said we didn't pay off the Rick Camp story. I don't want to rush your story, though, because I feel like we need to talk about this.
That's fine.
Give people a thumbnail sketch of what happened, and then we'll talk about it more in depth tomorrow.
I thought I knew where I was going for Tanny's Super Bowl party. It turns out I was wrong.
Rick Camp ended up at someone else's party looking for Chris. And since Chris is a fairly normal name, there was someone named Chris at the party. He was a block away from the house that he should have been in. Strangely enough, I was told a similar story by Kyle Long at the Super Bowl, that Jay Glazer had invited him over to his house and had forgotten to tell Kyle that he had moved. Imagine Kyle Long showing up at your front door. Like, he's lost 80 pounds now, and he's terrifying. Imagine him showing up at your door and being like, hey, is Jay here? You're calling the cops. He said he ran away. Campy, you didn't run away, did you?
No, I don't really run.
You kind of slinked out?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
and left his Modelo there, too.
Hey, good man. Those people hosted him. He left beer there.
Right.
That's a good man. He left them some Modelo. With the first pick in the plumbing and heating supply draft, contractor select supplyhouse.com. Take the field at supplyhouse.com today to get 1% for each touchdown scored in the big game. Take it to the house, supplyhouse.com. The confetti that fell as the Chiefs won, all of the white confetti, were Twitter supportive messages from fans. How crazy is that? I'll talk McNeil and Parkins next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.